Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Back here on a Thursday, it's Cody and Gold presented by Crossroads Investment Lending, the fix and flip guys at kclynn.com. Alex Gold, Cody Tapp, Steven Serta with you here on 610. We're about a half hour away from our Chiefs Red half hour. Nothing but Chiefs coming your way. And looking at the wide receivers in free agency and in the draft, what route would you go if you're Kansas City? And we look ahead to 2025 when it comes to the NFL. That's part of what we got coming your way.
Can we look ahead to like what your life will look like in 2025?
See, you've said a couple times with Serta within the next 8 years. You think he has a couple kids? You think
I think Serta might have zero kids in the next 8 years. I think you might have like two. Wow. Serta probably still has zero.
I don't have any interest in having any ever.
A lot has to happen quickly here for me to get on the Cody Tapp timeline.
I'm way too selfish.
Oh, 8 years or 20? Yeah, 2025 is
2025. Yeah. I think you have one.
Yeah,
ooh, it's 5 years, man.
My goodness,
I'm sure children are rewarding, but
I gotta get.
If it makes you feel any better about the whole rewarding thing, at 1:30 in the morning last night, there was 30 straight minutes of my 3.5-year-old just like yelling in her room, and not like angry yelling, just going like, "Dad, hey, Dad, it's time to play. Let's play. I want to get out of bed. You want to play?"
Like, does this happen a lot? Is this normal?
No, not commonly, but it does happen because they're kids and they just
sounds miserable.
And you just go in there and you're like, "Ruby, look, it's like I just talked to him like they're people. Like it's time. Like if Serta were doing the same thing,
like, you said, I just talked to him like they're people.
Well." People do not talk to 3.5-year-olds always like they're people.
I do that all the time to my nieces and nephews. I'm really sarcastic to them.
I talk to them just like I would anyone else.
Yeah, when they do dumb stuff, I try to make them feel bad about it.
Just like, "Ruby, it's time to go to bed. Can I get out of bed?" "No, you have to sit in there and go to bed and go to sleep because it's late and I'm tired." About, 45 minutes later, it got quiet.
Oh, that sounds terrible.
She's a good kid.
That sounds awful.
But she was just like just talking in the middle of the night. Sometimes she just talks in the middle of the night, but like is reenacting things she likes. Sometimes she just like making up characters and like talking to herself, and that's fine. I just live on that. But she was specifically trying to get my attention last night to free her. She had to stay in her room.
Yeah, this all. I mean, like I'm listening. You got a plan for me in place. My first of all,
this
we got
kids, man.
Yeah, it sounds terrible.
There's good parts.
Oh, I'm sure.
Nah, I'm just a little more tired.
I just like being the uncle. I can deal with the fun stuff. My nephews, I don't have to deal with any of that.
Just give them a bunch of sugar and just move on.
I don't have to deal with anything else.
Yeah, it's an easier route. I'll give you that. Serta's got that route down too.
Way easier, that's for sure. Hey, coming up in about 8 to 10 minutes here, you're going to hear from Nicky Lopez. He's going to join us here on Cody and Gold, Royals second baseman. We'll get his thoughts on how the start to spring is going and the differences from year one to year two, also his offseason plan, what he's been able to do. And thinking of that, heading into 2020, and now that the first spring training game is tomorrow, and as Serta said, you can hear that right here on 610 tomorrow around 2 o'clock. They'll take on the Texas Rangers. You are clearly on board with Mondesi having the massive season that you thought
he would have
a year ago. And, of course, the injury put a halt to that. So beside him, who could have that breakout season for Kansas City? I mentioned Nicky Lopez is going to join us. I think he has to be one of the candidates. If you're trying to find somebody that maybe could have a breakout year here for the Royals, and the reason that comes to mind here is, mentioned the offseason, we're going to talk to him about this. I'll ask him. 18 pounds of muscle since last season, so clearly was a focus for him. Just the automatic difference in being on a big league roster from year one to year two, just naturally, you had that experience a year ago, and now you know what to expect a little bit more heading into year two. You're going to be in a little bit better shape. He was only 165 pounds last year when he was on the Royals. His OPS was just 601. I'm not saying he's going to all of a sudden hit 15 home runs this season. That's not what I'm saying. When
I'm not sure that's the type of hitter he's designed to be.
Exactly. That's not the OP. It's the singles into doubles, the doubles into triples, right? That'll obviously help out your OPS. And with a little bit more muscle, I think that is more reasonable to expect. And for him, just being in year two, naturally, I think you're going to just be more comfortable. And so I look at him, even though we did our projected lineups, and I have him, and you have him also, batting ninth heading into the season. I think that's where most people would have Nicky Lopez, assuming he ends up being the second baseman, which we all expect him to be here in 2020, barring something really crazy happening. And so I think he's a potential breakout candidate. To break out, it doesn't have to be. Right, Nicky Lopez doesn't have to have a huge jump in numbers. I just think if you have somewhat of an increase, he can be the guy that maybe, I don't even say surprises some people, but just takes that next step because it's year two and also clearly a focus that he had on his body in the offseason.
He's got a real opportunity to do it because he did have a stretch last year where he looked comfortable, but it was a lot of like singles hitting. And I think he's got to, like, if he's going to be the breakout guy you're talking about, he needs extra bases somewhere. He needs gaps more often. And Nicky is, you know, he's the kind of player I talked with him last year about like diet. And like when he was going into the offseason, I knew he wanted to add a weight. And we talked about like why he couldn't keep on. He was always losing weight during the minor league season because, you know, they don't feed you real well. And you're constantly on a bus and you get home late and it's hard to constantly like kind of eat and work out the way you need to if you're at that level. And I'm not surprised he did it. For me, I know that he had a big year last year. But when I say breakout, I think for me, it's being able to repeat something we haven't seen repeated yet for him. And that's Hunter Dozier. I think that he's had some core muscle issues and obviously was pacing really well earlier in the season and even still finished incredibly strong. I know it's not a breakout because you're saying, well, there's only so many position players it could be. If you're going pitcher, I think there's a few options in that category. But I just feel like I like where he is going to be on this season again. I think he can repeat what he's done. I think the talent was already there for Hunter Dozier. He wasn't originally taken as a top five pick, thinking that's exactly where it is, but it kind of slotted in with where they were going to pay Manaea and some other guys. So maybe went a little higher than he thought he was supposed to be and took him a little longer to get through the league than you would necessarily expect, but he got there. And I think that he's going to have another big season. On the flop end, though, here's the problem. There's a few guys you could choose on the pitching staff.
It's a lot easier to find those,
unfortunately. There's a few guys you could pick in the lineup, too, because they've had struggles the last couple of years. But the one guy who really needs to break out that I worry won't is Jacob Junis. You might not have realized, like, obviously he didn't have a particularly good year, and people are familiar with that. But of all qualified starting pitchers, and there were about 60 in Major League Baseball last year, he finished with the third worst ERA in all qualified starters. Third worst. Reynaldo Lopez was one of the two guys below him. He did not have a particularly good year for the Chicago White Sox. That's it, man. He was a full three-quarters of a run behind Homer Bailey, who was qualified. He was a full run behind, you know, Brad Keller, who was qualified. If he's going to continue to be in the rotation, I know the people have been like, ah, he can be a fifth starter. He can be in your rotation. He can be there. This is only 60 qualified starters. That would only be, essentially, top two starters for any team in Major League Baseball. So I'm not saying he can't be in a rotation, but they need him to solidify a spot in the rotation. And we just haven't seen that from him yet. And I worry that that trend is going to continue.
So you think it's much of the same then from a year ago? You're mentioning flop. I mean, with both of them.
I know, but like my thought is like people keep thinking he's going to take that leap. And
you think finally, unfortunately, finally you may come to a realization that it's just not going to, that's not going to be the role for him.
I think he'd actually be a pretty, like, and I know anytime like a starter fails, you think, let's go to the bullpen. But he throws 91, 92 now. He's got decent movement on his fastball, but it doesn't really move all that fast. By Major League Baseball standards, you put him back there, he might be going 95, and his stuff might look a lot different.
On the flop end, just because naturally you're looking at a platoon right now in a position battle at first base, I think those O'Hearn and McBroom are probably two candidates just because you wonder, can either take a stranglehold on the first base job? Can either one truly separate themselves even as you get into the season more and become the guy? And are both of them potentially going to be flops this year? I think that's the concern. First base is obviously one of those question marks on this roster heading into 2020. And so I think they're both candidates for that. Certainly, you would love to be surprised by one of them in spring if one of them breaks out a little bit here. It's one thing to break out in the regular season, but if one of these guys does break out in spring, then maybe that erases the chance at a platoon. But I think we both expect it to be a platoon between O'Hearn and McBroom for the most part here.
O'Hearn has never shown any consistency. Like, he shows bouts of power when he's not hitting the ball into the ground. The problem is he's hitting the ball into the ground a lot.
I mentioned Nicky Lopez, the breakout candidate for me here in 2020. Let's go out to the phone and welcome in Nicky Lopez right now, the Royals second baseman. And, Nicky, just how has the start to spring been for you so far?
Oh, definitely. It's going really well. A lot of excitement around here. And, new skipper, and you got, obviously new ownership, but a lot of excitement. You could tell the culture and the locker room is kind of changing right now. The clubhouse is changing too. So we're really excited, and we're ready. Friday's our first game, so we're gearing up for it.
You mentioned a new manager, Nicky. Obviously, in the minor leagues, you kind of go through that every year because just depending on the jump and level you take, you got a new guy kind of telling you what to do. Does that make it easier to transition in the majors, considering you haven't had the same guy as a manager for more than a few years at this rate?
Yeah, you see new faces, and you kind of get used to it. You're jumping from, through the minor leagues. But, this one's just a little different because it's coming from, you're kind of get familiar through the minor leagues of who your next manager is going to be. So when you're in single A, who the double A manager is going to be, and you know who that triple A manager is going to be. But, I was fortunate enough last year when I was in AAA to be able to talk to Mike and get to know him, and he got to know me. And, that's something that was very good and very beneficial on our part, because then, we didn't go in blind with a new manager. So he did an excellent job reaching out to us and getting to know us. And, that just helped him in the right spot when spring training comes and, we can just hit the ground running.
What are you going to miss about Ned?
I like the way he kind of gives a lot of freedom. He let us play, and he was a fun coach, and always joking around and stuff like that. That was good too. So this is joking around and light clubhouse was pretty cool and pretty funny, and it was a good manager, first manager that I've had in the big leagues, obviously. But I'm really excited for what we have in store with Mike Matheny.
You mentioned you had a chance to get to know Mike Matheny a little bit. Is there something that in your interactions here so far in spring that, I don't know if it's surprised you or just you maybe didn't realize something that stood out to you about your new skipper?
I can't say I was very surprised, but there's intensity to him that you can just sense when you're talking to him. He's a light-spoken guy. But you could tell that there's some intensity in there, and that's a manager that you want to fight for, and you know that he's going to fight for you. So, I wasn't really surprised by any means, but his speeches and his pre-practice meetings makes you want to go through a wall, and it really hypes you up going into that next day of practice and that upcoming day.
Nicky, they were making it sound like you didn't have an off season at all. You just, waited 10 days and then came down to Arizona and started, the Popeye routine. Not the Whit Merrifield routine, the Nicky Lopez routine for right. Bulking up. Is that pretty much how you handle the off season?
Yeah, exactly. It's the Nicky Lopez routine. No, I was just telling people, Whit has been great. He lent a helping hand into telling me what he did that off season was, gaining weight and this is not the end of it. I'm going to next year, obviously, going to do it again and, get bigger and continue to get bigger and stronger as time goes on. But, just focusing on my dietary plan, focusing on lifting. I think our season ended September 29th or 28th or one of those days. And, September 30th, I was down in Arizona. I lived out there the whole off season. I took about 2 to 3 weeks off, and then I hit the ground running with the support staff and the training staff down here, weight coaches, nutritionists, talking about a plan of, how to get myself in a great position coming into this next season. And I held it to myself to do so, and I thought that was, the most beneficial thing that I could do for my career. Next year we'll probably do it again, and we'll just keep getting better and better and learning a lot. So
is it hard to make yourself eat that much? I see you with cereal in the locker room or clubhouse a lot last year, but is it hard to make yourself eat enough to actually gain the weight?
Yeah, it's tough. It's tough the first couple of weeks. You have a whole different dietary plan of eating, and I was always the one that you're eating, and then once you feel full, you stop. And this is when I kind of had to cross. Feeling full, I keep eating some more. And that's something that I had to do. So the first couple of weeks of just constant eating, whether, you know, you have those big meals, obviously breakfast, lunch, and dinner, but in between those, you're snacking, you're eating some more, and then you're having shakes and stuff like that. So, you know, once you start feeling full, you just have to keep going. And, you know, it was tough. It was tough. But, you know, after 2 weeks, I figured it out and kind of had to get over the hump.
We're talking with Royals second baseman Nicky Lopez here on 610 Sports Radio. A guy that's obviously in great shape as well, Alex Gordon. What's it like having him back? I understand that it was kind of a cool moment when he walked in the clubhouse the first time. What's it like having him there again?
Yeah, it's great. It's awesome being back or having him back. He's one of those guys that you really look up to, and I actually really look up to. You know, I always tell the story that I was in Seattle, and I was struggling a little bit. I started going through this, you know, little tough patch, and he pulled me aside, and when we were in the outfield, it was in the left field, and he was actually pulled me aside and said that, you know, hey, everything's going to be all right. You're going to have a great career. Everyone goes through these struggles. You know, brought up himself. He brought up, you know, obviously Hosmer and Moustakas, and everyone goes through these kind of struggles, but you're going to be a better player for it. And, you know, he didn't need to do that. And that was, you know, a memory that I'll always remember. But he's the type of guy that you don't see anybody work harder than him, and someone that you really want on a team. So it's really great to have him back, and I'm excited that, you know, we have another go-around with him.
Do you expect it, Nicky, to be easier to start the season this year, anticipating that? I know you still feel like you have to fight for your spot, but if you're able to start with the big league club this year, do you think it'll be easier for you to kind of hit the ground running, knowing what maybe some of the expectations are versus, you know, that first half season in the bigs?
Yeah, definitely. I think, you know, you don't really know what to expect or how to prepare for the big leagues unless you experience it. And now that, you know, I'm fortunate enough to be able to experience it, and, you know, it hit me in the face pretty good. I started off hot, went through a tough streak, and then, you know, I was fortunate enough to, you know, finish off strong. But, you know, thanks to my coaches and support staff, they got me, you know, through it, and I think I'm a better player for it. But being able to, I think, start the season off kind of already knowing what to expect, obviously there's going to be some growing pains still, and there's, you know, everyone goes through them. But, you know, just I think that, you know, having another year under my belt will be beneficial, and I'm just really excited, you know, with this team that we have here. You look around the diamond, and we have a capability of doing something pretty special in this clubhouse. And I think that the culture is changing here. You know, we have the, you know, leadership, we have the support staff, we have the coaches for it, we have the manager for it. We just, you know, got to put the pieces together, and I think we could do something special.
Last thing from me, Nicky. I know you guys are down in Arizona, but there are a lot of Chicago transplants who end up in Arizona. How's the pizza? Is it close? Is it close to back home?
Is the pizza close to back home down in Arizona?
Yeah.
No. But there's one thing that I do have to say is that I'm actually, you know, I know a lot of people in Chicago is deep dish, but I'm actually not really a fan of deep dish pizza. I can only have like one, and I'm just not really a fan. I'm more of a thin crust, or I'm more of a you know, a New York style pizza. But, you know, hopefully no one back home from Chicago is hearing this, but I'm more of the thin crust. But you could find some really good pizza down in Chicago, your thin crust. But, you know, there's some pizza spots out here, but nothing really compared to it, I don't think.
I guess some of the young pitchers, when they had some free time in the last day or two, they got together, they were watching The Bachelor. Are you part of that group? Do you watch that show? Or what do you do in your free time over the next couple of days down in Arizona?
You know, I was always not a Bachelor guy. You know, I'm never really a Bachelor guy. I wasn't. But my girlfriend got me into it, and, you know, there's a group of people that actually watch it down here. So, you know, I've been there for a couple of those Bachelor viewings for sure. But obviously, if it's my choice, I probably wouldn't. But, you know, obviously sometimes you have to do something to, you know, make the lady happy, you know?
No question, man. Hey, Nicky, appreciate the time, man, and get after it here in the next couple of weeks ahead. And before we know it, we'll see you in KC.
Awesome. Sounds great. Looking forward to it. Thank you.
Yeah, you got it. Nicky Lopez here on Cody and Gold. Question there, and we got a little Bachelor at the end, and of course the pizza in Arizona, Cody, is not as good as it is in Chicago.
They have a lot of Chicago-style pizza in Arizona because there's a lot of transplants.
Like we were,
there's a lot of deep-dish pizza in Arizona. Trust me. I'm dead serious.
I'm sure there is.
There's Chicago pizza places everywhere.
It's Luminati's or Giordano's or something. It doesn't count. Like when we were in the Chicago airport, quick layover on our flight back from Miami from the Super Bowl, and you didn't see me for like 20 minutes or so. I ended up with McDonald's, unfortunately. But I walked down the terminal because I was hoping I could find one of those. And none whatsoever.
That must have been a real disappointment for you.
He said he's not a deep dish fan. He's more like the tavern style.
Also, he said that he watches The Bachelor because his girlfriend does. You just watched The Bachelor to watch. Are you caught up?
I watched, was it Tuesday night? One of these nights.
That
I watched
sounds
a little,
caught up.
I watched a little bit, but there's also some college hoops on. So it was bits and pieces. I did not watch the full. These episodes are like 2 or 3 hours long. It's ridiculous. I think it was the hometown dates, I believe, was this past week. A lot of controversy, a lot of drama. Most dramatic rose ceremony ever happens every week. Most dramatic one. Every week. That's the tease. Chris Harrison's got the best gig in the business.
Having a stranger essentially meet your significant other or your family and having to do it on TV, oh, God, I would not wish that on anybody.
The show's so scripted.
I like my family.
So
they would be...
All their hometown, all of them happen to have these expensive houses that they go, like they just have, there's no just normal family. They have, these all have very nice houses when they go and visit. So it's all scripted.
They probably give them a place to stay.
No, I think these are the real homes.
Well, that's convenient. Must be nice.
But
must be nice. But no, he's honestly, you know, when you mention him being kind of the breakout candidate, he needs to be. Like, that's the kind of thing that will make their lineup a lot deeper. When we went through the lineups yesterday, we know Witt can hit. We know Mondesi, when healthy, I think can hit enough. Dozier hit. They need Dozier and Soler to maintain. They need Perez. Perez will take a huge jump just when they got into the catcher position, certainly. But Nicky Lopez is one of those few guys, and Mikel Franco and a few of them are like, okay, like, well, let's see a jump. If we see a jump, then this offense goes from bottom third, which is what it was last year, to top half. Their top half, they got a chance to win several more games.
Forgot about Franco a little bit, just in terms of when we were doing breakout or flop. He's potentially in the flop area as well. Potentially.
He's a little of both. I hated the Chris Owings signing last year going into the year. It didn't make any sense. I like the Franco one more. I just don't like it paired with Gordon because then it doesn't give anybody any room. It's like, do one, don't do both. And the doing both part means that, you know, I'm a little less high on both those deals. But I like Franco more as a player. So I feel like he's got a better shot to not be a flop than the last couple of times they've done these, you know, one-year deals.
Coming up next here on Cody and Gold, it's time for our Chiefs Red Half Hour. Wide receiver position, draft or free agency? We address it next.
Cody and Gold, brought to you by Crossroads Investment Lending. The fix and flip guys at caseylend.com.
Back here on Cody and Gold, hanging out on this Thursday. Get to what's trending in the noon hour. Also, another chance at a pair of tickets to FAC Fight Night going down this Saturday at Silverstein iCenters Arena. Tickets on sale now at Ticketmaster.com. But let's get right into our Chiefs Red Half Hour. Right on this time each and every day, we try to give you straight Chiefs talk for the next 30 minutes or so. We start with the wide receiver position. And DeMarcus Robinson is a free agent. I think we both feel he will not be in Kansas City next year, and most feel that way. Sammy Watkins up in the air about where they go there. Does he agree to a pay cut? And if he does, is that enough? Does it matter enough? Or is he also out the door? Fortunately for Kansas City, even if two of them are gone, this is a very deep wide receiver class, both in free agency and in the draft. And Matt Verderam, we've had him on the show of FanSided. He actually had a column recently talking about the free agent market, and maybe that's an area that, because of the depth that exists there, that you could get a decent value on a wide receiver that can help you. Because you know your number one wide receiver and your number two wide receiver, if Watkins is gone, it's going to be Tyreek Hill and Mecole Hardman. The question is who's filling in that number three or four. I think that's what you're looking at for the Chiefs. And for me, because of the cost, even if it is maybe a more cost-friendly free agency at the wide receiver spot than in the past, I'm looking at the draft. I'm looking at the draft. To me, if you can wait until the third or fourth round, and based on what Mel Kiper and others have already said about this wide receiver draft class, it sounds like you can get a very talented wide receiver in the third round that might, in some other years, be an early second or a late first round pick in the third round. I like that value because of the contract flexibility you get there, and of course the lower price going forward. Those are the type of contracts that the Chiefs are going to have for the next 3 to 4 years.
Obviously, there's plenty of room in the draft, and they probably should draft someone too, because that's the way to keep weapons around Pat in the long term, especially in a very deep draft where maybe you don't have to spend the higher end capital. You want another. So I remember I was obviously advocating for them to just trade up and take Judy.
You're all about that.
And really just live that life. But, you know, obviously there's plenty of value later on in the draft as well. But I feel like maybe I'm the only one on this show, and we'll take your thoughts at the Smitty's Garage Burgers and Beer text line, 69306. I'd be fine with him targeting a free agent wide receiver. And the reason why I'd be fine with him targeting a free agent wide receiver is because I'm not yet sure of the fact that Mecole Hardman is ready to take over that role. If I know Mecole Hardman is a two, he can do the things Sammy Watkins did. And I know you're going to look at Sammy Watkins' regular season numbers and say, okay, like, that doesn't seem like much of an ask. Sammy Watkins, you know, Mecole Hardman essentially equaled that number already. So how could he not do that? And I understand that, like, that logic of it, but I think that part of the reason that Mecole Hardman's job was easier, obviously, what happened in the postseason as a result of, you know, what they got out of Sammy Watkins. I would be interested in targeting a free agent wide receiver, specifically because it is looking like it's gonna be cheap, because the market is flooded with wide receivers. I think there's going to be a lot of people seeking one-year deals. A.J. Green, Emmanuel Sanders, Devin Funchess, Paul Richardson, Amari Cooper, Randall Cobb. I don't think Cooper is going to end up a free agent. Travis Benjamin, Robbie Anderson, Demaryius Thomas, Matthew Slater, Philip Dorsett, Nelson Aguilar. Those are all and more of the wide receivers slated to be free agents this year. And there are plenty more behind it. I think it's just the kind of year where you could easily get a veteran wide receiver on a one-year deal or two-year deal that essentially is a one-year deal or three-year deal that is essentially a two-year deal, and you could find yourself some real value in there. And I think that if you're not 100% sure Mecole Hardman's absolutely ready to take that over, just drafting a wide receiver doesn't solve your problem, because they tend to start slow in Andy Reid's offense. Even Tyreek Hill, who was phenomenal in his second year, great in his third, got an extension, was like good for 500 yards in his rookie year. And, you know, and that's about what Mecole Hardman was good for. So I think some people think he's just going to take the leap that Tyreek Hill did in year two. And that's not always a given in this league.
We'll find out very quickly, depending on not only, because I agree they'll draft a wide receiver no matter what, but how early on they draft them or how many they draft, what their viewpoint, and certainly during free agency, what their viewpoint is on Hardman, if they believe he can be the two. I do think he can be the number two. I think he will be the number two for the Chiefs here in 2020, based on what we kind of saw toward the back end of the season, where he had more of a role, and they kind of went away from DeMarcus Robinson a little bit, and everybody was clamoring for more of Hardman versus Robinson. Once you got to week 10 and 11, everybody's wondering why is there not more snaps there for Hardman. I think we saw, and I think Hardman will be, he's going to have the big play threat, but I think he becomes more of a true number two wide receiver this next year, because in this past season, it was when he was catching the ball, they were big plays. They were touchdowns. They were 30 plus yard plays for the most part for Hardman. I think those will still be there. That's certainly a huge part of his game and a big reason why they drafted him. At the time they drafted, they didn't know what everything was going on with Hill and everything. So I think if you're going to go free agency, you mentioned guys like A.J. Green. It sounds great and all. Like, I honestly don't know what kind of market that's going to be as far as how much money that would require. Is it a 2 or 3 year deal for a guy like A.J. Green still at this point
I
in time?
Maybe it's
how
a much, one.
If it's a 1 year deal, what's that number like? Because if they move on from Watkins, there's the dead money we've talked about for this upcoming year.
They do
year.
Still save
it's seven,
quite a bit.
They save some, but it's what, $7.5
million?
$7 million
in dead, 14
okay.
saved.
So keep that in mind, though, if they go out and sign a free agent, if you're going to go ahead and let's say it's $7 million for Watkins here in 2020, and then let's say A.J. Green, let's say it's 10. There's 17. At that point, should you just keep Sammy Watkins? Restructure it a little bit, but like, or just keep Sammy Watkins. It's not a huge difference. All of a sudden, if it's $10 million a year, you get in that area where it's like, well, should just keep the guy that we know knows this system and came up huge in the postseason for us. That's the tricky part on the free agent route for me. If you're going to go north of $10 million on a free agent,
that to me lands in the same range as he's not a free agent wide receiver. but he's either a free agent or he restructures his deal in a big way and they go after a free agent wide receiver. I think they need another vet.
Randall Cobb is interesting because I think you can get him cheap. He was with the Cowboys this year. I'm not a huge fan of, but if you, not as a number two, Randall Cobb, if you're wondering his numbers, 55 catches, 828 yards, and 3 touchdowns.
Sir, is there any circumstance in which you would be interested in the Chiefs signing a veteran wide receiver on the free agent market?
If they get a hell of a deal on Robbie Anderson, I would be really intrigued by that because I think Robbie Anderson's a really talented wide receiver who has just been in a really bad circumstance in New York, and he would fit in perfectly with the speed on this team and Patrick Mahomes. But somebody else is probably going to pay him a significant amount of money because he's really talented. So other than that, zero chance I would sign a free agent wide receiver. And if they do, I would be frustrated by it because this is a uber, uber talented wide receiver draft class. You can find guys in the third, fourth round that I think can contribute to the team.
Rich Semini of ESPN, by the way, reported that Anderson is expected to command around $14 million.
Yeah, forget
per
that then.
Year.
Yeah, forget that then. Unfortunately, if that's where it's going, then forget it.
There's other things that says he's seeking only $10 million annually.
Robbie Anderson was also an undrafted player, and this is the first time he's hitting free agency, so he's yet to get like a significant amount of money. So I can't imagine he's going to take a pay cut just to like play with Patrick Mahomes.
As I said, I lean draft, but you mentioned, do you want to go veteran wide receiver? AJ Green, he's 32. Let's not act like he's 28. AJ Green is 32 years old and had an injury all year, even though he clearly didn't want to come back and play. Like maybe that's why the price is low. If you can get it at a cheaper price, I'm fine with it. But he's 32. Let's not. When we mentioned Randall Cobb, and I understand the type of career AJ Green has had. If AJ Green's healthy and he can still have, he's clearly the better wide receiver.
That's what you're banking on.
But Randall Cobb is, I think, 2 years younger. Yeah, Randall Cobb's 30. So let's not say, oh, Randall Cobb, he's old. That's why I wouldn't want him. If you could
Emmanuel
get Cobb,
Sanders is 33, and I'd be interested in him almost as much as anybody if it's a one-year deal.
It's all about the number for me, because if you start creeping at 10 and north of that, then to me, you work on just keeping Sammy Watkins and find a way to make that happen. If you could get Randall Cobb or any of these other guys we've kind of thrown out, not including Robbie Anderson, because there's no way he's going less than $10 million. If you could get a Cobb or any of these other veterans for, and that's $7 to $8 million on a one-year deal, I have no problem with that. Bring him in as your number three wide receiver and see what happens there.
And he might be your two, and Mecole Hardman gets used in the slot or however you want to structure the offense. But I feel like it'd be good to have one more pass catcher that you can 1,000% rely on and still do exactly what Serta's saying. You know, give yourself the opportunity in a wide receiver in this draft because there's a pretty good chance you get to walk away on it. And I just feel like the thing you can't know, you know, is whether or not Mecole Hardman is ready. You're just like, he's ready. He's fine. He'll be a number two wide receiver. I'm like, okay, what gives you the confidence to say that?
Andy Reid and the track record, and also the guy named Patrick Mahomes, putting him in a good spot. And another year of development of the offseason. He strikes me as someone that is going to be able to, has already
picked up
things
quickly. Obviously, his biggest flaw as a
wide
receiver is route running.
Sure. No, and he's got to work on that. And it's not going to be, like, I don't think
And that's the one thing I think people think you can just, like, learn. And it's not really, I mean,
Look how much better of a route runner it's taken time. We're already, you know, we're ways down the road on Tyreek Hill.
Hill was better his rookie year than Hardman was.
I'm not saying Hardman is better than Hill. What I'm getting at is look how much better that Tyreek Hill has become. Hill's a fantastic route runner
now. He has, but I'm saying Tyreek Hill's route runner when he came in the league.
And that may be the case, but doesn't mean that Hardman, you're not asking him to be your number one wide receiver.
No, you're not.
And so that's why I think ultimately, especially by the end of the season, no matter who they bring in, Hardman will be your number two wide receiver. I know you mentioned maybe they put him in the slot. That's one option. I think you go draft. I absolutely think you go draft unless you're going and going to get a veteran that's going to be in that $7, $8 million range, so less than 10. You go north of 10. I just don't like the idea of that. You might as well just keep Sammy Watkins, restructure if he's willing to.
I've seen a few different options for them in the draft, too, as we continue to try to figure out what they might do with that 32nd pick in the first round. Mel Kiper's most recent mock draft had them taking a big defensive lineman. I've seen Dobbins go there multiple times. I have not looked at our guy Binkley's most recent mock draft. You know he does one like every day, right? He'll have mock like 37.0 done by the time this draft actually starts. Anyone have any idea what number he's up to? Well, it's got to be more than four.
Is he five? Is it five in maybe?
I mean, maybe. He gets pretty far down the line pretty quickly on that end, so I would say that there's a real possibility he's already.
But you're
that
right.
Far down
I mean, the CBS
line.
One we did look at recently,
like, and I don't
J.K. Dobbins.
A wide receiver there either. Like, and I just know that yes, there are talented wide receivers that go in the third or the fourth round this year. That might be high second round picks last year. Okay, great. Mecole Hardman was a second-round pick last year, right near the middle. And he needed time, like a full year, to adjust. And we don't even know that he's going to make that leap. If he does, then fine. Your system works perfectly. In 2 years, you'll still have Tyreek Hill under contract. You'll have Mecole Hardman, who is ready to take over the reins. And then you'll have another wide receiver in year two, ready to take a big leap forward. And you might have the best young wide receiver crew in all of the NFL, which is why I do want them making the move. I just think to secure yourself in what should be another potential Super Bowl run this season for Kansas City, the way to kind of secure yourself is to sign a vet. Now, I know that he could prevent the one problem with the veteran thing is anything else. He could slow some of the progress from some of the younger wide receivers because he takes more snaps, more reps, more time on the field. And the easiest way to get better in the NFL field is to actually be on it. So that is an issue with it. I might legitimately consider either. Which way would you go? Free agency, draft, both. Smitty's Garage, Bourbon Beer text line 69306.
And from the 816, someone says, Watkins, $7 million cap hit to cut. How does paying $7, $8 million to another guy make sense? $15 million for a number three wide receiver. Well, that was what I was getting at initially, at the very beginning. That's why, to me, when
people
teams
don't typically look at it that way when they're doing those moves. I know what you're saying.
When it creeps, to me, it's when it creeps above $10 million. Then all of a sudden, if you're going to go ahead and move on from Watkins, then all of a sudden $10 million, you're paying $17 million for a wide receiver essentially. And I understand, yes, they may not look at it that way, but that's financially, that's what it is. Though it'd be paying $17 million to replace Sammy Watkins for 2020.
Yeah, and you could just pay him 20, and you assume that he would take a cut below 17.
Maybe he'd get down to 15.
He'd take a cut below 20. I don't know if they're going to find a cut number that I understand that. Fine, that's the same. We're having the same philosophical argument. They're keeping a veteran wide receiver versus signing a veteran wide receiver versus going in the draft. This is the same argument. Yep. Whether they do it with Watkins or a different wide receiver, the argument is the same. Do you think that they need a veteran wide receiver to support that staff? And I think, yeah, maybe that would be a good idea, because I'm not 100% sure what Mecole Hardman is just yet. That's my only concern. I can't be sure about him until I can see him again on the field next year.
A guy we mentioned just at the tight end position a day or two ago, after we saw the Browns moved on from Demetrius Harris. Well, very quickly, Demetrius Harris has signed up with some familiarity there in Chicago. So Demetrius Harris off the board. If you were thinking that the Chiefs would bring him in to be their number two tight end in 2020, that's not the case. So Demetrius Harris signing with the Bears.
Well, that was my other solution. So that's why we had to go to the veteran wide receiver. Serta really actually wanted Demetrius Harris here. It'd been fine. Now instead it'll just be Blake Bell back.
I guess. I mean, I would have been fine. Yeah. Either way, it doesn't really matter.
It doesn't move the needle.
No. I mean, they need another tight end, but whatever.
It's going to be Jason Witten. You're going to be so mad.
I mean, I would also be annoyed if they burned a draft pick on a second tight end.
Ooh. This year, you mean?
It ever.
Ever, I don't mind.
While they have Travis Kelce, the second tight end really doesn't mean that much. As long as you can halfway block.
If it's next year and they feel like it's maybe the next guy at some point.
Like the Goddard to Ertz combination.
And eventually to replace. I know Kelce wants to finish his career here, but you never know how things go financially and also as age gets up there. But yeah, I don't think anybody's expecting a tight end in a draft this year, right?
No.
That would be stunning at this
point. No, they only have five picks. If they're spending them on tight ends.
If they stockpile some picks, even then would be most likely surprising.
I'd rather they take two wide receivers in this draft than take two tight ends. Sure. Take a wide receiver and a tight end. I don't even know how deep the draft is that year, so no thank you on the tight end department.
We continue our Chiefs Red Half Hour here on Cody and Gold, and look ahead a little bit to the future. You joked about me having kids by 2025, which is very, very scary. What about the Chiefs in 2025? So these are always fun to look at, and we project how long GMs are going to be with organizations and coaches and quarterbacks and how many rings are going to be tied to them. So Yardbarker went through, and they projected out to 2025, and they just put it into tiers. So who has a wide-open Super Bowl window still come 2025? Who's just solid 2020s contender? Who has upside, but there's uncertainty? Then major questions, and then tier five, they put, well, history not on their side. So the four teams they put, they have still a wide-open Super Bowl window projecting to 2025 and beyond. They had the Chiefs, the Ravens, the Niners, and the Seahawks as the four teams that, for the next five-plus years, have a wide-open Super Bowl window. Chiefs, clearly, nobody's surprised to see that at the top there. What's interesting, the Ravens, can you go to 2025 with them?
Can you with the 49ers?
Because
I'm not trying to knock them, but Jimmy Garoppolo is still their quarterback.
We know your opinion on Jimmy Garoppolo.
So
my thing with the Ravens is, I think Lamar Jackson's great, but isn't the question with him still 5 years from now if he's in, like, if he's healthy still? Isn't that the biggest question mark with him? It's not whether or not he can throw or his ability. The ability, of course, that was answered in a big, big way this
year.
It is about, with any quarterback that's mobile like that, in 4 or 5 years from now, is he still healthy? Is he still, I don't want to say still in the league, but yeah, I mean, north of 5 years, I think there will be some people wonder, if I were to ask you in 2026, is he still the starting quarterback in the National Football League? There's plenty of reason to be doubtful of that.
Just based on history, yeah. Be that way. But I don't necessarily disagree with the list. That checks out to me. When I'm trying to think about
Seattle,
the
definitely
future playoff teams, the only other people you could put on that list is guessing about quarterbacks you don't know anything about. There aren't that many good quarterbacks. Like, Aaron Rodgers is old. Tom Brady's old. Okay, so I don't want to project them 5 years into the future, so count me out there. We already talked about the rest of this division. You want to cut Josh Allen in for a five-year run? No. Deshaun Watson would be the only one I feel like I would miss on that argument, because I think with a 17 playoff, I don't know about a wide open Super Bowl window, but I do think that that is a team that is likely to be in playoff contention quite a bit over the next 5 years. And I don't think I'm alone on that.
Then they put this, the contenders. Here were the teams that they listed as contenders for the next five plus. Patriots, Bills, Eagles, Saints, Rams, Packers, Cowboys, and then there's your Texans as one of the other teams included in that. As you notice, we haven't mentioned one other AFC West team, and a huge part is who's quarterbacks for any of these other teams in the AFC West. You have to go to the tier three where it's upside but uncertainty to find any AFC West teams, and the first one is the Broncos. Major questions is where you find the Chargers and the Raiders.
Well, that's fair.
And that's why we think
the Chiefs
are... You
don't know who's going to start at quarterback for them 6 months from now. Like, at least the Denver Broncos, we know that come September 1st, their starting quarterback is going to be Drew Locke. The other two teams in the division, there's been rumors, even as early as today, about the possibility that Derek Carr could be on the trade docket and other teams might inquire about what he's going to do. We know that the Chargers have moved on from Phillip Rivers. We don't know if they're going to go Teddy Bridgewater, if they're going to go draft, if they're going to go both. It's a good roster, but you just don't know the answer to either of those things, and it just kind of makes sense to me that you wouldn't want to get bogged down in other guessing games related to that.
And there's, I mean, across all sports, is there any franchise that appears to be given, with Patrick Mahomes, just in general, across sports, we mentioned, is he the most explosive athlete in sports yesterday? But, I mean, looking ahead, 2025, Mahomes will be 30 at that point in time. All right, that might be scary for some people to think, but he'll be 30 in 2025.
What?
And with that said, I mean, they're as set as any team, are they not? In sport, not just in the NFL, but in sports. Baseball, NFL, the NBA, doesn't matter.
Yes, because the NFL has one position that matters more than any other, and that's the case. The only other sport you can even make an argument for is the NBA. And LeBron, for 5 years, is not the window of time you would want to go with. The other thing we can't know about 2025 is whether or not Chris Jones is going to be on the team for the Chiefs, as we're in the middle of our Chiefs red half hour. Mike Tannenbaum at least suggesting he seems to feel pretty confident Chris Jones is going to be back.
The player that will be edged out will be Sammy Watkins. They're not going to let Chris Jones go. If they can't get a deal done, they will franchise him. He will be there next year.
Okay.
You could carve that in Sharpie, as my man Acho would say.
Yeah.
And somebody else will go. It'll be from the receiver position.
Pro Football Focus had out their current projections for offseason contracts. Chris Jones, 4 years, $18 million per year, $52 million guaranteed. So that's 4 for 72 with $52 million guaranteed.
That's
that seems
way low.
Low, right?
Can they sign that right now?
I think if the Chiefs right got now? Offered that deal, they probably would sign it right now.
That's a team-friendly deal. That would be banking on the idea that it genuinely means as much as he says that it does for him to stay here in Kansas City.
Right, if you're projecting that deal, you're assuming he's back with Kansas City, because you get more than that on the open market.
Yeah, I mean, if that's what it's going to take, then go ahead and get this thing done now. If that's what it takes to get it done, then you would love that. That's significantly below what anybody thought you'd be looking at Chris Jones. If you do that, you're in an even better spot than you would think over the next couple of years. If you're able to take care of that, and far as some of the financial flexibility that that would get. It's still a lot of money, no doubt, and you got all the money tied up with Frank Clark. But if that's what it takes, then absolutely you're keeping Chris Jones in 2020 and beyond.
You were asking about A.J. Green, by the way. They have him projected at a three-year $16.67 million
okay.
per.
That seems low, too. Per. But
no, 16.
Wait, he's 3 years per. Okay, I'm sorry.
$18 million. No.
I was like,
16.67 million.
Yeah, forget that. Forget that.
Year. I'd be not interested in that. They have Jameis Winston guaranteed, 1 year, $27 million contract, fully guaranteed.
And Bridgewater was what, around 30? That's what people were thinking. Bridgewater gets a 3 year deal worth $30 million per, and Winston's getting 1 year at 27.
Robbie Anderson, they have projected at a four-year $13.13 million deal with 28 guaranteed. Sir, I'd actually be interested in that deal.
Man.
I'm kind of with you. That would be a fun addition to this offense.
On a one-year deal?
No, it's four.
Four-year deal?
You know that really means it's a two-year deal, so.
Yeah, I just don't think that they can
afford that number.
You can't move on from Sammy Watkins just to replace it with a comparable contract. Like, I know Sammy's going to make more than that this year, so they obviously have to move on from him.
But they'd be paying the exact same amount this year, really, for Robbie Anderson versus Sammy Watkins. Yeah, that's a problem. That's a big problem.
But, yes, Robbie would be dynamite in this offense.
Man, I feel like $72 million. If Kansas City got offered that right now, 4 years for $72
million. And that's from Florio?
They would take that in 1 second. This is from Pro Football Focus's.
Focus. Okay.
2020 NFL free agency predicting landing spots for every Pro Football Focus top 50 free agent. And obviously, again, when it comes to that Chris Jones deal, when they're predicting that, they obviously think he ends up back with Kansas City during that run.
I mean, I know he wasn't getting Aaron Donald money, but my goodness, that just seems
low.
I mean, Donald's 22.5. Fletcher Cox signed at 17.1. Grady Jarrett last year, 17. This is having it just barely,
a hair over that at barely. $18 million and $52 million guaranteed.
And most of us thought 20, right? That was the number? 21? 20 or 21. This is still putting him $5 million less than what Aaron Donald got on average per year.
He's going to get less.
I mean,
than Aaron
I love that number. Please, by all means, that'd be great. That means Chris Jones is back if that's the case.
If this is the best he's going to get from the Chiefs, I think it's, nah, I'm good, and then he gets franchise tagged.
And then he gets traded, and then he maybe finds out he gets a similar number from someone else. But I can't imagine he takes that offer first. First? That seems wild to me.
I see, true. I mean, that would be a nice little hometown. We were talking about hometown discounts. Be a nice one. Be a nice one.
Yeah, means I think Kansas City be just fine with that.
He wants
just
a couple,
fine with that.
Couple rings to go along with the one he just got in 2019. Coming up next on Cody and Gold, we'll get to what's trending and more on the NFL, this playoff expansion headed in 2020.
Cody and Gold, brought to you by Crossroads Investment Lending, the fix and flip guys at caseylend.com.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.